thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hey, it's not John Williams. It's Frank Fontana and Sherry Fontana filling in for John Williams while he's away eating haggis. Is that what you call it?
Haggis.
Haggis. What is it? Did we officially find out?
I have no idea, but hello, everyone.
This is Sherry.
And what is he doing?
He's eating haggis.
Explain to me what that is. Maybe Elif I should know.
Elif would be better at it because I have no idea.
I only know because another producer told me that it's guts of an animal. I don't know. I forgot.
Well, I mean, it's not too bad because in the Italian culture, we eat cow intestine, right?
Called tripe. I have to be honest. I did not hear what she said. So you guys are both laughing. And for some reason, I couldn't hear her. So I can't lie because I didn't hear what the explanation was.
Oh, she said it was some type of dead animal carcass of some sort.
Okay. So a tradition of some sort.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Can you hear? Can you hear Elif?
No, I can't. Yeah. I think I need to
one,
at some
two,
point.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Might want to plug in your headphones. Okay. I can hear you perfectly fine. Hey, guys, welcome to the show. We have a really fun one lined up. My wife, Sherry, is joining me on the mothership here. This is her second time with me this week, right?
This week. As you can, I'm glad you said second time because I didn't have the volume turned up, so that's why I couldn't hear.
It's a little thing called the volume button.
I couldn't hear myself either, so thanks.
Which just makes you you, you know? You're so authentic and real. You don't really do radio, but you're so... You have experience working on the television show we did together, Downtown Shabby. So
yes.
She's not a complete amateur.
No, I actually like it. I don't know if everyone does, but I do enjoy it.
You like to talk.
I do like to talk.
And I mean it in the best way possible.
No, I have an opinion, and I do like to, you know, say how I feel, and I do a lot of research, and I think it... Second time this week, so...
Well, we got some.
How
good
do you feel about it? Are you excited to have me here?
Anytime you're with me, babe, is the best time of my life.
Okay, let's just talk about our topics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So what do we have coming up?
Well, so the other day, and we're going to get into this in depth, but the text messages are already blowing up with the topic. What quirky things do you do that other people might get annoyed with? And what I mean by this is Sherry and I recently celebrated our, ninth anniversary?
Eighth year wedding anniversary.
Go with your gut.
Yeah.
First thing.
Eight years.
May 1st. And she got me some lovely chocolates, some gourmet chocolates, a beautiful card. And we collectively, Sherry and I.
Which I was thinking about this. I'm glad we both do this because we're not annoyed by it at least.
Yeah.
One thing we're not annoyed by each other. So go ahead.
That's for the later part of the show. What annoys you about each other. We like to cut open the chocolates to see what's inside.
Well, and the funny part about this is I picked the different types of chocolate in the box.
Yeah.
So you would think I did know. But now that I'm saying this, Fannie Mae, they used to, I don't know when they stopped this, but if you turn the box upside down, it actually had the name of each chocolate in its place. But I don't think they do it anymore. So yeah, so we both cut the chocolate in half to see what's inside before we actually eat it.
Was it Whitman's chocolate or that does? I don't know.
I don't know. I thought it was Fannie Mae, but I could be wrong. But
well, anyway, the point being is that, you know, there's different types of people in the world and different strokes for different folks.
Mm-hmm.
And we proceeded to do what we do is cut the chocolate just so we could see what's inside. If we don't like it, we don't eat it. Now, other people would bite it, look at it, like Steve Bertrand said, and throw it away.
Yes.
I see that as wasteful. But our neighbor, Kevin, came over and we're just, you know, chit-chatting, having drinks. And he looks at the open box of chocolate and he's got this look of disgust on his face.
Like, truly mortified.
Yeah. And he's like, what is wrong with you people? And we were like, what are you talking about, Kevin? And he proceeds to launch into a tirade about how we approached our chocolate assortment and how we eat it.
Yeah, he didn't just let it go. He literally was like, I don't understand. Like,
well,
why would
discussion.
You do this?
Yeah. So we explained our position on it. We were like, no, we do this because, like Steve, would waste one. I would prefer to open it, look at it, maybe nibble it, and throw the half away. And saving the other half for maybe a guest who might want that, right?
Well, wait. Now, that's your opinion.
What's your opinion?
I do it for a couple different reasons. I like to sometimes just have a small taste. So I cut it a piece off just to have a little taste of it. But I have to stop you there because I would not cut the chocolate in half, eat half of it, and serve it to a guest. If I did have guests coming over, I would leave the box of chocolate together. I really would.
Oh, really?
But for us, I have no problem doing that.
Because we already had a texter calling in saying my idea was brilliant, that this is from 6847. Hi, Frank. I think it's awesome that you cut the chocolate candy and leave it in half for a potentially guest to eat. This totally makes sense. so people don't chew something and throw it away.
Yeah, so maybe we could invent or recreate chocolate in the form of
half a chocolate,
little tiny bits or bites yeah. of chocolate.
Why not?
But it made us strange. I don't know.
It made us think, like, okay, so Kevin went on and on about this and says, no, you got to be a man. Just throw it in your mouth and whatever you get and deal with it.
What if you don't like it?
Well, then you spit it out and waste it.
Or swallow it and just be like, oh, see, I guess I'm too picky to actually just swallow something I don't like the taste of. It just grosses me out.
So let me just get this straight. Kevin walks into your house and gives you his unsolicited opinion about the way that you keep your chocolate.
Our neighbors do that often, actually. They come into our house and just...
They're friends. So, yes, we allow them to have a say in our chocolate, you know.
Well, it is your house, so...
What do you do? Are you a full-blown, just take the chance and eat the chocolate no matter what's inside of it?
I usually take a very careful bite and then hate it most of the time, throw the rest away.
Right. Yeah,
wasting.
So I agree with what you do.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
But what things do you do that you think or know other people think are weird and quirky? We'd love to know. We're going to talk about this in depth. 312-981-7200 is our number. You could text in your weird and quirky thing that people think is weird, but you don't.
So does that also include things that you or I would do that are annoying, or is that different?
Oh, that's a whole other show. We can do a whole show on what's annoying. Like, I guess it annoyed Kevin enough for him to say something about
it. So, yeah, I guess he was annoyed. But are we talking, like, things that people... Yeah, I guess that would be annoying to the other person that maybe wouldn't seem like the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, we asked our daughter Lola, who's with us today, and she said that what annoys her is when her brother Luca changes the channel on her in the middle of a show.
Which could be annoying.
That could be annoying. So what things out there, folks, annoy you the most? Is it your husband, your brother, your loved one who just does something that gets under your skin, like eats half a chocolate and leaves it there? Or like another texter said, their brother used to put their finger through the chocolate, the bottom of the chocolate to see, but leave the top clean.
I used to do that.
I think that's an age-old trick, I believe.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, we had another text that said, my husband leaves the back door open all day and night, every time that he walks the dog, every time he walks in.
Are you sure you didn't text that in?
That was totally me.
Yeah, that was you. That's another pet peeve. Mm-hmm. Now, I come from a very, you know, safe place. So, I you know, in Canada, you don't lock doors.
Well, we're not in Canada. But yeah, we do live in a very safe area. But I am one that, like, closes the door and puts the alarm on, even if I'm in the house. So I guess that's why. Maybe my gauge is off.
Maybe it is a little bit. So people are texting left and right. 708 says Whitman is the one who had the chocolate guy.
Oh,
I was right. And then I have a friend who puts peanut butter on pizza. Come on now. See, that I got a problem with.
Oh, peanut butter on pizza. Unless
it was a peanut butter and jelly pizza that didn't have the sauce and the mozzarella on it. But if it had the sauce and the mozzarella and you put the peanut butter on it, that's sacrilege.
That's opinion. So that's the different flavor. So Julie mentioned earlier that Jake rattles the ice cup.
Our
friends. Her husband, Jake, will have ice in the cup and rattles the cup. Like that annoying
shakes
sign of like that.
That could be annoying.
Could be annoying or put you to sleep.
Either one. What quirky things out there do you hate or love that your loved one may do or friend? 312-981-7200. We'll take your texts and calls. And then we got some really interesting topics above and beyond that. Sherry read this article, and we started to talk about this on Saturday's show when we were filling in for John Williams then, about this article she found out of China, where it's called The Fall of Masculinity. And it basically states that, you know, in China, they are very displeased at the male youth, and that they're very feminized, and they're putting out alpha male schools and putting these young boys through alpha male schools so they learn how to be tough and masculine.
Like tough and I mean, they're in the freezing cold with no clothes on. That was one example.
Really?
And they're like literally sitting there freezing. And what is that supposed to build, like your toughness and your ability to adapt?
I read somewhere that in Russia, in some of the preschools and kindergartens in Russia, they'd actually make the kids go out in the winter in the snow with their underwear on as part of recess.
I would like to see the psychological damage caused by this.
Or positivity.
30 because years from now.
Maybe or maybe not. Maybe it builds machismo. Maybe it builds the ability to endure.
I'm sure it does. I think it probably would, but I think that comes potentially with the price.
Well, the video I saw about these little Russian kids, they were all happy. they were out there playing in the playground with their underwear.
Yeah, probably, because if they weren't, they'd be scolded by the Russian
in a cave somewhere.
Police.
So we'll be talking about this article here. And then later on in the show, grief, dealing with grief. We recently lost a loved one in our family. Rest in peace, Dominic DeFrisco, great friends of my wife's family and I. And he passed away. When was it?
He passed away. Yeah, a couple days ago. And we laid him to rest, and it was amazing ceremony and tribute to him. But the kids knew him very well, and they spent a lot of time with him. So it was something that I wasn't going to hide, and certainly, you know, talk about death to our children. But I do think that it's, you know, needs to be thought out and talked about in a very, you know, educated kind of way that they can relate to, and you know, from their age group.
Yeah, I mean, dealing, and it brought up the topic for us, dealing with death and dealing with grief, and then the conversation that ensues with your children. How do you deal with it out there? What stories do you have of telling your children about a loved one passing, as well as, you know, do you believe in afterlife? You know, we in our family do, and, you know, we do believe my kids want to come back as redbirds, and we have that, literally have that conversation of, Daddy, what can I come back as after I die?
Yeah, I mean, they were looking for Dominic the next morning to fly by our house as a redbird. Now, I mean, maybe that's not, you know, extreme for some people, but I think whatever, you know, allows them to process it and understand on their level is a healthy way. But I would love to hear from people too, what they tell their children and what their experience has been, because I think it will be helpful for people to hear.
And that'll be happening later on in the show. Right now we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, this week on Chicago's Best, it's what you guys are pretty much always craving. Pizza. Not with peanut butter on it. Pizza. Check out Chicago's Best Pizza Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. Sitting in for John is Frank and Sherry Fontana.
We're here once again, two times this week, huh? Yeah,
I always look at you to say something. Say something romantic to me. No one's listening.
I love the way your hair looks this afternoon.
You've been saying that all morning. I'll continue to style it as such. We're just left off talking about the quirky things that people do that annoy the crap out of you. And we mentioned about a friend of ours who came into our house, saw my wedding chocolates all cut up and had a fit about it. And people are just sending in hundreds of texts. And we'd love to take your calls, too. We're going to be giving away a pair of registration to 5th Third Bike the Drive Sunday, May 26th. It only happens once a year. Cycle on a free Lakeshore Drive, car-free Lakeshore Drive. Then come to the Post Ride Festival in Butterfield. Use code 53SAVE3. To save $3 off registration at 53bikethedrive.org, so you can win a pair of registration tickets for the 5th Third Bike to Drive. If you have the best story that annoys people, we're going to read some of these texts. Cher, why don't you lead off with some of your favorite here?
Some of these are so funny. So a text from 217, hate when people stand in line to order food and wait till they get to the register before they even look at the menu. So true.
It's so true.
You just said it this morning.
I did. Yeah. And this is another one from the 815. My wife leaves the refrigerator door open for minutes at a time, and it drives me insane. I hate, Luca, our son, does that. He'll just go into the fridge, leave the door open, and walk away with the door open.
I've never seen him do that.
Because I close it. That's why.
You probably.
I follow behind him.
Oh, wait. How about this one? 708. Drives me insane when my wife picks my toddler's nose. Because his nose must be clean at all times and free of boogers.
No matter where they're at. That's classic.
That's
let's
a good
see
mom.
Here. That is a good mom.
I have one.
You have one? Let's hear it.
Yeah. It's whenever someone talks really loudly on the phone, especially if they're just in the house. And I won't name any names, but she knows who she is.
Oh, gosh.
Really? So not in a public place, but in the house, they're just loudly talking.
Screaming on the phone as if the other person just cannot hear you unless you're talking at like 1,000 decibels.
See, people do that. That happens a lot when we're at dinner. Like if Frank and I could hear the people next to us loud and clear, we both kind of look at each other like, are they talking loud? I don't talk loud to begin with, honestly, so I have to like really try to project if for people to hear me. But
well, it's almost like they want you to hear what they're saying, right, Olive?
Yeah, but in this case I'm talking about my mom.
So she probably doesn't want you to hear.
Maybe she's hard of hearing a little bit.
I was going to say, maybe she can't hear as well as you think, honestly.
I don't know about that. She has good hearing.
Oh, boy. I love this one from the 815. I don't care where I am, I will straighten pictures on the wall.
I love that.
Are you like that?
I'm not. I may notice it, but I would feel bad like if the owner or someone or the person at the office was in charge of that. I don't know. And I'd feel bad if... they weren't doing their job correctly.
I mean, so being,
I just feel bad for people like that. But yeah,
design,
that's a good one.
It is a good one. I often, I do that. I do it in my head first. I'm like, will they know if I just straighten that out?
You do that at home a lot.
I do.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it in anybody else's house, though. How about this from the 630? My wife leaves her clean and folded clothes sitting on the dining room table no matter who is coming over. Says everyone wears underwear, so what's the big deal? How do you feel about that? I mean, would you do that?
I mean, it depends on... I wouldn't do that necessarily, but I do so many other things. But maybe she's in the middle of doing something else, and as long as they're clean, I don't know. Well, our dining room is right when you walk into our home.
True.
So I would not do that. But on the stairs going up, maybe.
What about cutting your toenails in front of people?
Like you do?
What do you mean?
I don't like that. That should be a private thing.
It should be?
Unless you're cutting your child's toenails, like an infant or baby.
But you want to groom yourself. I mean, I try to do it in the bathroom sometimes, but sometimes I just want to watch something.
Oh, I know
something.
When you do it in the bathroom because there's toenails all over
no,
the floor.
I shoot it into the toilet.
No, they don't go into the toilet.
Then my aim is off a little bit. Sometimes you get a misfire.
Yeah, no, not so much.
It just shoots out.
That's actually a great topic, like things that people do that
yeah.
are gross and shouldn't be doing.
Well, let's talk to Julie here, who's calling in. Hey, Julie. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi. You're welcome.
What annoys you about somebody that they do in front of you?
Oh, he'll look at the box of chocolates, find the one that he likes, and he will eat every last one of just that specific chocolate.
I love that.
And leave the rest for everybody else.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
But he doesn't even just take a bite and put it back? He just eats the whole darn thing?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, and if he doesn't like it, he'll put it back. But if he likes it, he'll eat it. But he'll eat all of the rest of them.
So somebody, you know?
Somebody, like,
go ahead, Julie. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say if I like the caramel ones, it's just too bad because he likes them and he'll eat every last one of them.
So I have a suggestion: take out the ones that you like and at least hide them. Or put them in a safe area, because I could see Frank does some similar things like that with chocolate.
Yeah, and then another text suggested that just buy the whole box of chocolate you like, and it won't be a problem, which is a good solution.
Well, which is amazing, because that's what I did for you. I picked ones that I knew that you would like. You didn't like some of them.
I didn't like a lot of them.
Okay,
well, I love you,
isn't it hard to find?
Yes. Yeah.
It just seems like it's hard to find a box of chocolates that is not assorted. And then you're in trouble because you never know what's in them.
It's so true. Julie, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye. All right. Let's talk real quick to Mary. Hey, Mary. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi there. I was just saying what my pet peeve really is when I'm going for gasoline, especially like at Costco, where you have a lot of people waiting in line, and finally the car in front of you gets up. The gentleman gets out, he walks around, he stares at the pump, then he reaches in his back pocket and tries to get his wallet out, finds his card. I mean, come on, you've been waiting in line for 5 minutes. Why don't you have the card in your hand?
Yes, multitask.
I agree with you, Mary. What? That's one of my pet peeves, too, Mary. And guess what? You just won yourself a pair of registration tickets to the 5th Third Bike the Drive, Sunday, May 26th. Hang on, I'm going to have Ella take your info, and she'll get you over those tickets. Thanks for calling.
All right.
Welcome back to the John Williams Show. Filling in for John is Sherry Fontana and Frank Fontana.
Here we are together again, Frank.
Like it should be, Sherry. Mm-hmm. Like it should be. Hey, so we're going to switch gears a little bit here. By the way, love the texts that are still coming in, and maybe we'll revisit this towards the end of the show and read some more of these amazing things that annoy people, mostly between husband and wives.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like husband and wives annoy each other more than anyone else, probably.
Blessed marriage.
Well, we spend the most time together, husband and wife. So
this is true.
Makes sense.
Kids fight with each other. You know, that's the way it happens sometimes. Speaking of which, recently we mentioned that a very dear friend of ours had passed away this week. Dominic DeFrisco, you might have seen it on the news. It's been all over the place. Dominic was a renowned cultural icon here in Chicago, representing the Italian American community, as well as political, and worked with Edelman for decades. And our children and my wife was super close with him. And, you know, you had to have the conversation with your kids sometimes, the tough conversation about dealing with death, right?
Yeah, I mean, they spent a lot of time with him and know him very well. And so I wanted to be honest, and they can tell I was visibly sad. So yeah, it's that fine line between, you know, being honest and truthful and telling them what's going on, but yet bringing it down to their level so they understand it based on their age. So that's the combination I think is tricky.
Yeah, it really is. And I since then went on a little bit of a search to kind of deal with it myself and think through that what you're going to say to the kids. And I came across this great podcast from TED Talks. And take a listen to this quick.
October 3rd, I lost my second pregnancy. And then October 8th, my dad died of cancer. And then on November 25th, my husband Aaron died after 3 years with stage 4 glioblastoma, which is just a fancy word for brain cancer. So I'm fun. People love to invite me out all the time. Packed social life. Usually when I talk about this period of my life, the reaction I get is essentially, I can't imagine. The people we love, who we've lost, are still so present for us. So when I say, oh, Aaron is, it's because Aaron still is. And it's not in the way that he was before, which was much better. And it's not in the way that churchy people tried to tell me that he would be. It's just that he's indelible. And so he's present for me. He's present in my marriage to Matthew because Aaron's life and love and death made me the person that Matthew wanted to marry. So I've not moved on from Aaron. I've moved forward with him. So I met Matthew, my current husband, who doesn't love that title.
Well, that was author Nora McInerney, right, Elif? Phenomenal. She wrote a couple books on dealing with grief. As you can hear, lost her husband, her father, all in a short period of time. It's a tough thing. And you're like, what do you tell the kids? And she had two young kids. And it's profound in TED Talk. You should Google it and look at it. But some of the takeaways really were, you know, you don't sit on grief. You move through grief. And everyone has their own process, right? You can't tell somebody how to move on from grief. How did you deal with it, Sherry, as Dominic being so close to you, as a mentor your whole life?
I feel like my process takes a little bit longer, so I'm still dealing with it. But I feel like, especially with children, they have the right to develop their own process as well. But I feel like when they are young, they don't really know what that process is because they may be experiencing it for the first time. So, yeah. I mean, children are dealing with death, you know, all the time. Like in this article from the Washington Post that you referred to, children are dealing with death in many ways, like dead bugs, sick grandparents, the loss of a pet. So it's definitely a real honest topic that happens. Mm. But I did struggle a little bit with, like, I said to our children, oh, Dominic DeFrisco passed away. And the minute I said that, Lucas said, how old was he? Hmm. Like, he wants to know how old. And then I think he thinks about people around him and their age. And I said 85. And I remember you saying, no, he was like almost 100.
Yeah, because you can't help but want to sugarcoat death to your children. You know, it's one of the most depressing things to think about.
And I could hear the older generation, you know, saying, you know, don't do that. Don't shelter them. Don't do that. And I think that that's very true. Like, even when the news is on sometimes, when it's just like, I don't like to have the news on. I feel like it's toxic sometimes. It's just negative.
Not for a 5 and 7 year old.
I want to turn it off.
I agree.
Like, they can't process it.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear, you know, from our listeners out there, how do you drive through grief? How do you deal with having that really tough conversation? I feel like there's a lot of tough conversations you have with kids throughout their lifetime, and this is probably one of the toughest, especially when they lose a loved one.
Yeah, and also to bring that further, also explaining it to them, but then on the other hand, at what age do they come to a wake or a funeral? Or does that depend on the person in their life and how close they were to that person? Like, how do you navigate that?
Yeah. I felt one of the ways we do it, and I think we're in alignment with this, is really moving through it and talking about what's next. Like, with whether you believe in, you know, whatever religion you believe in. But we, in our household, believe in afterlife. We believe in reincarnation. And we've instilled that in our kids because I think it's, whether it's real or not, you no one will know, because unless you've been on the other side of it and come back and have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of people who do.
It's a positive aspect. It's a positive thing that kids could, you know, take away from death without being so afraid of it.
Sure. I mean, if you listen to people like Deepak Chopra or other spiritual, you know, gurus out there, they all talk about the idea that, you know, we're just meat and bones, but our soul is energy. You know, on a quantum field, we are just all exchanging energy. So if that's true and the sack of meat that we walk around in goes away, our energy still exists into things. And I said to you, you know, walking up to the casket at the wake, do you think that there's any residence of life and energy in that corpse, you know, in the body, that lingers there to experience that energetic exchange? Or do you think that
at that very moment,
at that moment, at the passing, or do you think it's completely lights off, you know?
I mean, personally, I think everyone has a different opinion, but personally, I think at the moment of death, your spirit leaves your body. I think that Dominic was in that church as a spirit looking down and smiling and engaging and in the way he could. But I think that the spirit does leave your body at the moment of death.
Do you have his card with you? I love the saying that they put on the back of the card. Do you happen to have one of those mass cards with you?
Oh, I
see
may.
If you do. In the meantime, let's talk to Brian, one of our callers here. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, buddy. Thanks for calling in on the topic. What say you about this?
Hopefully I can articulate it right. My thought process and the way I raise my kids and working with my grandkids is the same way. It's like, you know, when a child gets hurt, you got two alternatives. You can either make a big deal out of it because they're making a big deal out of it, or you can calmly just go up to them and say, okay, what do we got? And, you know, calmly work your way through it, and it calms them down. Same thing with death. Same thing with any of the hard topics. You can go in there with the approach of, oh, my God, you know, this, or you can explain it to them, see how they start processing it, and work with them depending on age, if they need any help processing. But if you make a big thing out of it, then they're going to make a big thing out of it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of overwhelming. So explain the facts, explain what it is, and then see how they handle it.
Do you think, I mean, so in reference to our household, we've got a 5-year-old daughter, Lola, and a 7-year-old son, Luca, that at that age, you know, the ability to articulate, probably more so Lola at 5, isn't there, but my son, Luca, at 7, is pretty smart kid, and he gets everything, you know, and
right.
You know, so well,
one of my grandkids is 4.
Yeah.
And just recently, my mother passed, and then 2 months later, or my sister passed, 2 months later, my mom passed. My 4-year-old grandson understood what was going on. We didn't make a huge deal of that, of their passing, but just explained it to him, and he took it fine.
Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense. Depending on their reaction, that's how you can tell how deep to go and how many explanations that you do need to give them, depending on their reaction.
Exactly. Find out what the reaction is. Don't blow it up out of, you know, it, like I said, you know, you get one of your kids falls and scrapes their knee and it's the end of the world for them. If you calmly go up to them and say, you know, well, let's go ahead and take care of this, and this, it calms them down, where you get the alternative, something, oh my God, you know,
yeah.
And they just feed off of that, you know, kids feed off of your presentation.
So true. On every level, on every level.
And so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said on every level, no matter what the topic, they always feed off your energy.
Oh, exactly. And so just take I know death is death, but, you know, just make a positive approach on how you present it to them.
And Brian, is your personal philosophy, do you believe in reincarnation and afterlife?
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, I'm a little different breed. my folks own cemeteries, so I grew up in the industry.
So you've seen a lot here now.
I believe in ghosts. I've seen them, you know.
Wait, hold on.
Things like,
my wife's
now
huge,
you're speaking my language.
Yeah, Sherry is somewhat of a intuitive in the sense of connecting with people. And you're chomping at the bit here, Sherry.
I mean, I've had spirits come to me since probably 8 or 9 years old. I mean, not on a regular basis every day, but at least, I mean, I cannot even count how many times. And I will channel, like, if I have a question or are praying to somebody or need a message, I will pray to that person, and I usually get a sign, and it's not a coincidence.
So, Brian, you said you've seen...
You know, everybody's at their own level of consciousness when it comes to that type of stuff. You know, I think that we've been kind of neutralized in it, as you will, because maybe everybody's downplaying things, but you know, this, let's step back a little bit. You know, when you get that feel of that hair on the back of your head stand up, and you get this instinct something's going to happen, and you just dismiss it. You know, we kind of neutralize ourselves in the spiritual area and with all that type of stuff. And if you opened yourself up to it, you'd be able to see more.
That's an excellent point. I completely agree.
Yeah, and we do have to take a break here, Brian, but I'm fascinated with the fact that you said you actually seen ghosts. Do you want to hold on, Brian? We have a couple of calls, too, that we'd love to get to. Do you have a second? I'd love to get into this a little further with you because this is an interesting topic to us. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Cowboy John Williams Show here on WGN. What kind of music is this, Elif?
It's Johnny Cash.
I love Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
just wasn't expecting
good.
It. That's all. I'm sorry. Sherry Fontana sitting across from me. We're talking about death, grief, and the afterlife. And if you weren't listening before, we were talking to one of our callers, Brian, here. And Brian grew up in the cemetery businesses, correct? Hey, Brian.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, you said you grew up in and around the cemetery business, correct?
That's correct.
And you did mention something that kind of got slipped over that I really want to talk about. You said that you have seen ghosts.
Oh yeah, yeah. One of the real quick things was myself and the other caretaker. We had both had dogs. I had a Dobie and he had a Shepherd. We walked past the mausoleum, which was condemned, had broken windows and stuff, and the dogs would just stop and also look at the window every once in a while, or You couldn't get them inside of that place if you dragged them. And if you did drag them, they'd take off out of there right away.
Really?
They could feel the energy. Well, one of the homes that I lived in as a child was an old convent. And I used to see a priest. And it's funny because when I did see that, my father saw the same thing. Like, randomly we talked about it, and it was, like, the same guy in, like, this gray long coat. And so I think if you're open to it and you just have a certain kind of energy, I think it happens.
So that technically wouldn't be necessarily reincarnation. That would be stuck in the afterlife almost, correct?
Well, my wife believes in reincarnation, too, but I don't know. I mean, you ever see a kid that whether they're singing or playing an instrument or something like that, and people say that they have an old soul?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what I think it is. They're just picked up a little bit sooner than most people. And after, you know, afterlife of what they had before.
I agree with you, Brian. Thanks so much for hanging on and the great info. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Y'all have a good day.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. So let's talk to Patricia, who has an interesting perspective on how she dealt with, you know, death and dying with her son. Hey, Patricia, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I was so glad to hear Brian talk about his view of it, too. I was older when I had my son, so I didn't want his first wake to be a grandma, you know, or a grandpa. And I'm an RN, and I do hospice. So I used to take him with me to meet the patients, and then when he would pass away, we would go to the wake. So by the time he was 80, he was a professional mourner. He knew where they kept the cookies, where they kept the cake.
So
he had no fear of it. And then in my family, my mother, we dealt with it with humor. She always said, just put me out for the polar bears.
That's funny.
So I talked about it freely. My son is grown now. He's 33, and he has very specific instructions to do with old mom when the time comes. So yeah. I think if you can have an open dialogue on it, and doing hospice for 12 years, it's so important that you talk about these things because we're all going to go.
That's so true, Patricia. Thanks so much for the input. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Right. Bye-bye.
So, now, I'm going to admit something, personally, that I am not a fan of wakes. Not from a disrespectful standpoint, not from an inconvenience standpoint, purely from this. This is the God's honest truth. Like, when my grandmother passed away many years ago, I lived in California. I had visited them, you know, a few months before she passed. I had this amazing remembrance in my mind of this vibrant, alive, happy, sweet person. And I always felt like going to see this corpse diminishes in my mind the last memory that I had with her. So if you can understand where I'm coming from, it's not a disrespect thing at all, because I still go to wakes. I don't like them because I like to remember people alive.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just my thing with it. And I still do it out of respect. And obviously I was at Dominic's the other day. But just my personal feeling is I want to remember it. Like, and for me, when I die, and just so you know, take notes, I want a party. I want you to rent out the biggest nightclub, get the best DJ,
Well, hopefully I'll be very old, and all the people that we know will be very old, so we will not be jamming with glow sticks at your funeral.
No, I want you to, even old, jam with glow sticks. Well, I want it to be celebration.
Well, and that makes sense. I mean, I guess you mentioned a good point, like, it's still a form of respect. I mean, to be honest, you know, seeing my grandmother ill at the end, even seeing Dominic in the hospital, we walk in and it's like your breath is taken away because you're like, holy cow, like now you're seeing this person in a different form. Yeah. But you have to push through that and remember. I mean, Dominic's funeral was a celebration and there was music they were playing Frank Sinatra when he was walking in, you know, they were walking him in. But I hear you. So if we can, as individuals, create what we want for our end, obviously, but I don't know that we could make a big enough push to change the whole entity of wakes.
I'm not pushing for that. I'm just saying that, you know, like, I think, you know, everybody has their right to dress it the way they do. And I think, you know, you raise your kids the same way, just like this woman brought her kids to the hospice to see people, you know, ill and dying. I respect it. I don't know if I agree with it. I think that it's going to happen. Why rush that process? And I think if your children are well adjusted enough, and you're like Brian said, it's about your energy and how you deliver it. But, you know, Dominic had this great saying on the back of his mask card. Why don't you read it? Because I think it sums up what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, it's do not stand at my grave and weep. It's by Mary Elizabeth Fry. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am 1,000 winds that blow. I'm the diamond glitz in the snow. I'm the sun on ripened grain. I'm the gentle autumn rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in the circled flight. I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die.
I love that.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, so then you go on and you either become a redbird like my kids want to be, or you become a ghost, right? Like Dave says here. Dave, you said that you see ghosts on your job. Is that what you do?
No, 50 years ago, my summer job, I was cutting grass in a cemetery where the Haymarket Riot supposed people were buried after they were hung and convicted and then hung. But there's a statue there that somebody keeps putting a black rose on once a year. When you're cutting that section of grass, I remember, no matter where you were, it could be 90 degrees outside, and it felt cold, or the hair on the back of your neck was like, you know, it was no other part of the cemetery that I was cutting grass in that had that. It's just that, you know, you could turn around, and you're like, man, it is cold here, and you're like sweating, and it's just pretty scary, I mean, when you think about it years later.
You're giving me chills just talking about it. Wow. So you never actually seen a floating being or what looked like a ghost?
Well, and a different story. My mom died when I was 15. She died from cancer, and my brother and I were in the upstairs bedroom. And we heard my dad crying, and there was a red light, as I guess it would say, or something in the doorway. And there was always a street light that shined through the window, but it wasn't a red light. Street lights are basically white. And we ran downstairs and, you know, and we had to call the ambulance and et cetera. And then years later, I lost a son to cancer, and my oldest daughter would tell me months later that she kept seeing two little red eyes in the bedroom that my son had died in.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, you kind of have to, you know, is there a hereafter? Is there an in-between?
Yeah, I'd like to believe that we do come back, that our energy and our life force and our soul goes into whatever other being, whether it be an animal, a person, or a thing, and lives on, because the idea of the lights just going out isn't a pretty one. Dave, thank you so much, and appreciate the contribution.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hey, 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 it's not John Williams, it's Frank Fontana, and Sherry Fontana sitting in for the great King John.
King John, and what is he doing again? Eating
haggis somewhere in the world. Is he in Ireland? Where is he?
They're just coming back from Scotland today.
Scotland.
Yeah. Actually, he's in Philadelphia, to be honest.
Really?
Just landed. They're connecting and flying back now.
Nice. Oh. So, Steve, what is exactly haggis?
Haggis, it's made with sheep intestines and things like that. It's a
like
sort
a sausage
of a national
kind of thing?
Dish. It's encased in many times, but they serve it all different ways.
But is he eating this to celebrate something? Is it a tradition?
No, it's just,
well, it's kind of it's a national dish in Scotland.
Oh, okay, it is. So,
is it tasty?
It's like having tripe. on Easter. Guess.
I mean, I've had it there where they deep fried in little like appetizer nuggets.
Hmm.
You know, that's kind of tasty. It all depends on how they serve it, but you can just slice it out of the casing, too.
Anything fried is
good. Sounds yummy.
Breaded and fried. You can get away with anything, really.
Well, it's not usually served that way, though. That's a...
the American way of
doing
it?
That's an adaptation to get people to eat it, I think.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Hey, Steve, you got your son's how old now?
21.
21.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Jerry and I always talk about this because, you know, a lot of stuff floating around the news and having a young son. And living in the Me Too era and you know, a lot of people talking about the demasculation of today's male youth. Do you feel growing up that, you know, because it wasn't as big of a topic, that your son had a fair shot at being a alpha male or macho kid?
What do you mean?
Well, we came across this article, and Sherry found it, from the LA Times. It's called "The Fight K-Pop's Influence in China: A Club Teaches Young Boys to Be Alpha Males."
Yeah, it's basically saying that they're trying to toughen up young boys. I mean, they're putting young boys at the age of like 5 and 6 years old in 14-degree weather in the morning, you know, without a lot of clothing on, to kind of get them to adapt to cold weather and toughen them up and to just make them more alpha and masculine. And I found it so interesting and just not... I found it really sad, to be honest with you.
I don't know. Is being an alpha male something you're supposed to aspire to? Or, I mean, I don't think I'm alpha.
Well, I mean, you are, though, Steve. I mean, you're not like a jerk. I mean,
but I'm not like...
But you're confident and you're masculine and you're, you know, like you have a certain air about you.
I don't use Old Spice.
No, you don't. Gillette, maybe. A little Gillette.
Right.
But I think, you know, what they're referring to is the fact that, you know, you almost can't say, as a male today, you almost can't say anything, right? You have to be really careful about what you say and your opinions because it could be taken out of context and or, you know, if it's intentionally malice, then of course it deserves, you know, a little lashback. But, you know, I'm not saying I'm for this, but I do believe that, you know, a balance of... a little bit of toughness, a little bit of masculinity, a little bit of going back to the roots of, you know, we were, as males in this world, our genetic encoding is to hunt and gather, you know, and I don't know.
Club people over the head.
Yeah,
stuff like
yeah.
That.
And while the woman was barefoot and pregnant in the caves.
I don't want to make it like that. That's not what I'm saying at all. I don't want to take my words out of context. But I do believe a balance of having a boy be a boy and feel his testosterone going and, you know, like, I guess, you know, have we curbed it too much? Has society curbed that too much?
And that's what they're saying in China, is that it has been curbed so much that the decrease in masculinity has been affecting their society in a negative way, truly. That's what they're saying in China. So I guess it's definitely an interesting topic, and I think it's very debatable. I think it's individual based on, your family and your beliefs.
So do you feel like your son had a fair shot at being a real boy?
I think my son's turned out just fine.
Good.
I don't know if it's funny. I just was talking to him about 20 minutes ago. I'm going to ask him. He's driving now. I don't know if he would consider himself an alpha male.
Yeah.
Or aspire to it, Frank. I think of alpha males as these, you know, sort of grunting, having to be in charge kind of guys. And, I'm not lining up for that role.
No, no. I guess we don't live in a time where you're going to be, you know, pillaging a, you know, next door village where you need a Viking leader.
I hope
to,
not. Yeah.
You know, but I do believe in society there's roles, and I do think that you want to, you know, if a president's, you know, I'm not going to use our current president as a good example, but, you know, if you think about presidents that you felt power from, there'd be a certain level of alpha involved in that, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, can you be alpha and cerebral too? Because
absolutely.
I think I'd go for cerebral more than alpha.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but if you're going to war, I mean, you could be cerebral and...
Well, hopefully you're cerebral enough to stay out of war.
This is true. This is true. But it's a good topic, and we're going to open up the phone lines. A lot of people are on both sides of this. 312-981-7200. Love to hear your opinion on what's happening with today's male youth. You know, is curbing their ability to be boys and like what that means. And I'm not saying I know exactly, but I'm a boy. And I know that in my era, it was a little different. And my culture also played into that, too.
And I think that that's a fair point. I think your culture does play into it. And I think your individual relationship is unique and needs to be kind of discussed initially.
Because
everyone's different and everyone's tolerance is different. I mean, I was in Hinsdale this morning and went to Blue Mercury, which is kind of like a salon makeup store. And there was a male makeup artist probably in his 20s, mm-hmm. you know, doing people's makeup. He had full-blown makeup on, you know, foundation, lipstick, and I didn't think anything of it, and I definitely would not consider him to be masculine. I mean, he seemed very nice and comfortable, but that's definitely different from what we're reading about that's going on in China.
Yeah, but the rest of the world, you know, they have a different opinion and different view. I mean, I'm sure kids in Russia, males in Russia are raised differently. Even here in Chicago, if you raised a child like on north side of Chicago versus south side of Chicago, you're going to have two different boys.
Different. And honestly, you know, hearing you talk about this, you have a certain personality that is a very strong, confident alpha personality, but to be fair and to be honest,
he's an Aries
and he's strong and strong-willed, but he honestly is one of the most kindest,
sensitive sweet
people. So he's not like this alpha male at home like dictating. You are quite the opposite. You're very kind.
Yeah.
So I think you, if you are able to turn on that alpha
when needed, yeah,
whether it's in the workplace or having to decide something for your family, I think it's a good balance of having to navigate that when it's appropriate to be used.
Yeah, I think it's like anything can be taken to the extreme, including demasculating males, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that could be taken to the extreme. Where's that fine balance? A lot of great texts coming in, you know, like maybe there should be some type of education or training process along with that creates a good balance of both. But we'd love to hear from you guys. 312-917-200. Do you feel like today's society puts too much pressure on boys not to be boys? You know, like even in front of our house or the blocks, you know, like in kids playing with each other and boys roughhousing. I feel like the roughhousing has stopped so quickly today. Whereas when I grew up, it's like until you lost a tooth or saw blood, then you stopped.
So, and I guess, again, that plays to your culture and
totally.
To where you
and
grew
where
up.
You grew up. Yeah,
because I'm all about having a little boy who's comfortable with his feelings, allowed to express his feelings, allowed to develop his process, navigate. He can cry. If he falls down and hurts his knee and he wants to cry, I'm going to hold him, kiss him, and comfort him. And hopefully he will develop his own process to feel comfortable. But I know what you're thinking. He's on the soccer field. He's 15 years old and he's falling and you don't want him to be sobbing because he's in pain, right?
Yeah, or he comes across a bully. You know, and his first response is to either not stand up for himself or, you know, obviously you want him to tell the teacher and talk to him. But if he's in a situation where there's no teacher around, you know, would it be helpful that he knew how to stand up for himself and, you know, fight that fight if he had to? I'm not encouraging it to. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think it's for all people, for no matter what gender you are. I think that you need to be able to stand up for yourself in this day and age,
yeah,
and speak your piece and be strong and confident and not really take crap from anybody.
I agree. This article has a great quote out of it. I think it's a good opportunity for these kids to gradually cultivate a macho character, said one of the mothers. She describes her son as shy and introverted and said participating in outdoor camps boosts his confidence, which kind of goes along to one of our texters here from the 630 says, what do you think Boy Scouts was or is? Camping in the snow with sub-zero weather, hiking for days under extreme weather conditions. My son may not be alpha male, but he'll make a great leader in any situation they put him in. That's a good point. There are things like Boy Scouts.
And so this is another great text. It's from 708. If you are the smartest, most talented person in the room, then you're alpha. Women can be alpha too.
Oh, no doubt.
Awesome
no
point.
Doubt.
And I know that you believe that, but yeah, this is something else that we can talk about. Women can be alpha too, but if you're too alpha as a female, then you're like aggressive and you're bitchy or you're too, you know, you're too much in your face. So it's like,
it's a double standard when it comes to
the alpha.
Yeah,
which shouldn't be the case.
The alpha male. Let's talk to Leo, who has a point on this. Hey, Leo.
Hey, I just wanted to address the question. A few moments ago, you were talking about if your son or even your daughter, basically your son, falls down off his bike, scrapes his knee, you said that if he was hurt, you would cuddle him and comfort him, mm-hmm, and hold him and make sure that everything was going to be okay. Problem I have is that what do you do when the same son is riding through the neighborhood with a half a dozen of his friends and he accidentally falls down and scrapes his knee and gets hurt? Not badly, but just hurt to where he doesn't want to ride his bike for a few minutes before he gets back on and mommy's not around. What do you say then?
That's a good point, Leo. That's kind of my side of the debate, is there's a balance there's a balance between it all, and I think that that's where we got to find a new happy place, a new healthy medium.
Well, and I also feel like
everybody wants to be held and set don't worry, it's going to be all right. When people need to adjust for whatever happens in life to correct things so you can get back up on the horse and take care of things yourself instead of having other people comfort you.
Leo, how old are you? Just out of curiosity.
I'm going to be 50 soon.
50 soon, okay.
Yeah, and I definitely see the point in that, but I will say, from a very young age, if you are there for your children to comfort them and teach them how to kind of deal with their emotions and deal with getting hurt and deal with the sadness, they will become confident teenagers and adults to be able to do that on their own, is what I feel.
Thanks, Leo.
That's more of an excuse of textbook material compared to real life.
I respect your opinion.
All right, thank you.
I love it, Leo. Thanks for calling. Appreciate the varied opinions on this. We do have to take a quick break. We'll continue the conversation. 312-981-7200. Do you feel that today's boys in general are less alpha than they should be? And alpha is just a general term for, I guess, what the Chinese article says about being more masculine or macho, which I don't think is there could be a healthy bit of it all. I don't think it has to be taken to the extreme as being, you know, violent or disrespectful to women. But I do think there, you know, things always equal out. And I'm wondering when it's going to equal out here. So 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana. Sitting across from me is my beautiful wife, Sherry Fontana.
Hey.
Talking about a topic that is gaining some heat up on these text boards and phone lines. And Sherry, you wanted to kind of just comment back at Leo. What's your position on what he's saying here?
I just feel like, you know, there was this old school way of thinking about how little boys should be treated versus little girls. And I think that as we evolved into, you know, a more educated culture and a more educated society, there's been a lot of research out there that says quite the opposite. Mm. And I think that everyone has a different opinion. You know, my parents are old school and say, you know, toughen him up or, you know, do that a different way.
Let him fall. He'll be fine.
Now that they see how strong and confident our son is, they're like, you know what? You were probably right. So I think everyone just has a different opinion. I think you do what works for you. But I think that as we evolve more society, we have learned that there's other ways to do things instead of just, you know, only tough love.
Yeah, and I agree. And I just want to point this out because you at home can't see what we see here on the text lines and stuff. There's a lot of people who agree with the idea that today's boys need to be a little bit more stronger and a little bit more tougher, and they men should be men kind of thing. Now, I know that can sound very ignorant, and I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying that, you know, there is different genders. Men have different hormones. You know, it's a whole different game when it comes to boys, and I think they should be able to express some of this without fear. But, you know, it's our job as parents then to teach them right and wrong and how to channel that. Like, I always had that thing. I think you're kind of born with a certain bit of alpha in you or not.
You definitely were, but I still have to go back to this, which is so important. You are so respectful toward women.
100%.
And I think that the stereotype is if you're alpha, you're tough and you need to, you know, be this tough. I mean, so if you groom a child to only be tough, who's this young boy who just wants, you know, to fight or be tough and shake it off, how will he ever relate to a woman on a level that is human and sensitive and emotional and build healthy relationships?
Yep, 100% agree with you. I think that, again, as even Steve's point, you can raise an educated, you know, successful child. And I guess, you know, in this article, the way they are portraying alpha, the term alpha, is more from a macho, machismo standpoint, which I'm not necessarily subscribing to at all. I'm just saying that I look at alpha as leadership, as courage, as the ability to, you know, fight the good fight when needed, but also be respectful to women and lead in a different kind of way, too. I don't think alpha just means being a jerk. You know, somebody texts in saying, oh, you know, future jerks. No, that's not true. Because our society needs all types to function, right?
Absolutely.
Anyway, coming up after the break here, we're going to be talking about favorite things to do, weekend events, and this fun little thing that John does. Elif's going to run that bit because we're all new to that. Right, Elif?
I got this under control, guys.
It's all you, girl. You and Lola. By the way, shout out to our secondary associate producer here, Lola Fontana, who's manning the mics with Elif. She's keeping Elif in line back there. Our 5-year-old daughter is so cute right now. Say hi, Lola.
Hi.
How's it going back there?
Good.
Is Elif doing her job?
Yeah.
Good job. Keep her in line, okay?
Okay.
All right, see you go. How cute is that?
That's amazing.
So, yeah, I just want to, you know, kind of button this up a little bit. I think that, you know, in my opinion, I think there needs to be a good balance of a new term we're going to coin here on the show, an educated alpha, you know, a respectful alpha that, you know, allow boys to be boys. At the same time, teach them respect, teach them dignity, teach them to love women and treat them right.
Yeah, a great
balance.
But
don't lose your manliness.
No, definitely not. I mean, and I think alpha and manliness and toughness is defined in different ways by different people.
Yeah. I mean, again, a lot of people siding with you, Sherry, on this, and some siding with Leo, our former caller. 815 says, my son was also in the Army, and coddling them is not going to work.
Not for the Army, that's for sure.
Not in the Army, but there, I think the statement is more broad and generic. So they're saying, Sherry, at what age do you stop the hugs and kisses when he gets hurt? Never.
Never.
My wife will never. He'll be 47 and, oh, Mom, I hurt myself. I'll be right over.
If my 40-year-old son is in the house with us and I am however old I am and my son gets hurt, am I going to run to him and say, oh, honey, are you okay? No, but I will go to him and say, do you need anything? That's my personality. But I'm not going to run on the soccer field if he falls. I think, again, there's a good balance. But to be judged for being compassionate and loving and, I mean, I don't think it's appropriate.
No, and I'm not saying this because you're my wife and the mother of my children, but you're a great mom. I mean, you have proven to a lot of naysayers in our family that the way you raise children with compassion and love and coddling, if you want to call it coddling, is a positive thing.
But it still comes with respect, and
yeah.
I'm also the one that's, you know, demanding respect from them. And if you're not there and I'm with, you know, our children and he's, you know, meeting someone for the first time, he's also taught to shake their hand, look them in the eye. I mean, there's finding a balance.
I agree. Let's hear what Joan says. She's raised two sons. Hey, Joan. Hey, Joan, how are you? Yeah, for sure. Hey, Joan, you there? For some reason, There you are.
Yes. Hey, Joan.
Hi. So I've raised two sons. They're 22 and 24, and they are like their father. They're strong, independent men, but I raised them to shake it off when they fell down, scrape their knees. I didn't coddle them, but they are also independent people, and I raised them to be people, not to be men, but to be strong, independent leaders and men. You know, not just men, just to be individuals that can take care of themselves and take care of other people.
So the whole idea of you saying that, you know, you just get up and shake it off. Sherry kind of rolls her eyes a little bit about that.
I think I mean, a different way.
No, but I mean, when they were little and they fall down, because I didn't want them to, and if they were girls, I would have done the same thing. It's like, okay, you skin your knee, we're good. You all right? Yep. Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah.
I, you know, if they hurt themselves, and believe me, that I've had two boys, and they were a little more reckless than my nieces were, they had broken bones and whatever. And, you know, so you definitely care for them, and it's okay to be upset, and it's okay to be emotional, but, you know, okay, we're going to move along now. You're okay. You didn't die.
That's it.
Like that kind of thing when they were kids.
I agree, Joan. Thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. All right,
okay.
We're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to do events around town. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. Sitting in for John is Frank and Sherry Fontana. Having a good old time. Chopping it up here at WGN Radio. Holding down the production here is our good producer, Elif, and our associate producer today, Lola Fontana. How's she doing, Elif?
She's doing a great job. She's spelling some words, and she's coloring some burgers.
Oh, good.
Rainbow colors.
Awesome.
Great. Very helpful for you. Yes. You're multitasking, by the way. The whole babysitting / producing thing is working out great for you.
You know what? I've done it before in here, so.
You have. Good.
It's not my first rodeo.
All right, it's time of the show where we talk about weekend events coming up. Elif, what's on your list?
Well, we are currently listening to Allie and AJ, who will be playing the House of Blues Sunday at 6. Tickets are $27 on HOBChicago.com.
Nice. And Bach Week Festival is here, 2019, the finale tonight with Sensational Singers at 7:30 at the Anderson Chapel at North Park University. Tickets start at $15. And you can go online at bachweek.org.
We also have the Cinco de Mayo dance party tonight at 9 at the Duet Dance Studio, Chicago on North Avenue. Tickets are $25 at duetdancestudio.com.
I think we can go to that one.
That's fun.
Yeah. Hey, Lauren, you got something for us?
Of course I do. We got a lot of Chicago baseball. Both teams are in town. So Cubs today, well, 1:20, so that's, you know, already going on. But yeah. Saturday is 3:05 and Sunday is 6:08. The Sox, they play tonight at 7:10, Saturday at 6:10, and Sunday at 1:10. By the way, for my fellow nerds, tomorrow is Star Wars Day at the park for the White Sox. So head out there.
Should be you know fun. Who's going to be there, right? Wendy's husband.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, Wendy's
husband. I will actually also be there. So
yeah. And then FYI, our good friend Josie Dunn is going to be singing the national anthem at the Cubs game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she was on our show last week. All right, so, Elif, you have another favorite?
I gave you all my favorites.
Okay, I'll read yours then. So the next one that I think I'd love to attend is the Hamilton, the exhibition begun. Was my reading yours, Sharon?
It doesn't matter. I can follow you.
All right.
Go ahead.
So that's the exhibition begun, and the tickets are on Ticketmaster.com. Tickets start at $39.50. Go check it out, Ticketmaster.com, the Hamilton exhibit.
We also have, talk about the Greek Heritage Parade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about it.
The Greek Heritage Parade, Sunday on Halsted Street in Chicago at 2:30. That would be fun.
That would be.
I like that.
Lauren, is that something you'd go to?
I would, but I'm not Greek.
Oh,
I might go to the Polish one.
You don't have to be Greek.
But wait a minute, don't they have awesome food?
I was just going to say that. The food must be amazing, and I feel like the cultural experience would be fun.
Yeah. I would definitely do it.
You don't like a good gyro?
Love lamb.
Love it.
In general.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have another one for us, Lauren?
I do, actually, if you're interested. Saturday is the Chicago Beer Classic at Soldier Field. It's pretty cool. A lot of great beer out on the field where the Bears play. Should be a good day for it, I think. Hopefully.
You notice something here, Elif? Lauren has all, like, the really good Chicago stuff, like the beer and the baseball, and we got all these fancy cultural stuff.
It's all good.
Well, yeah. But the culture plays into the diversity of Chicago.
Yes. Sherry, what do you got?
The Temptations and the Four Tops, Sunday at 7 p.m. Tickets start at $39.50 on msg.org or Ticketmaster.com. I actually fell asleep at a Temptations concert when I was like 3 years old in the front row. Yeah,
that's a good sell right
Not
there,
because
folks.
They were boring, because I was probably tired.
All right, I'm going to knock that one off the list.
Yeah, let's drop that one. This one I personally love because I play a djembe. You know, the djembe is like a hand percussion. And they're having an interactive drum show is playing a varying times over the weekend. More details at the djembe. It's D-J-E-M-B-E. The show. It's thejimbetheshow.com. Tickets start at $39. I got to check that. Remind me to check that one out, Chair. What else you got there, babe?
So the Switch on Summer is the official season opener for the Buckingham Fountain at Grand Park Sunday from 12 to 3. Free admission.
And Lauren, it's not necessarily Polish, but Germany Week with Wine Fine Fest at the Daily Plaza is starting today.
Well, all European cultures, I'm all for it.
Good.
Any culture, honestly. But, you know, since my bloodline is European.
There you go. It starts today and tomorrow, 4:30 to 8:30. Free admission, though tickets are varying in price. How is that, though? If it's free admission, tickets varying in price.
Oh, that's for the drink tickets. That's what I meant.
Okay, gotcha. All right. You, Cher, you got something for me?
I do. This is not only for me. This is also for Lauren. The Polish Constitution Day Parade at 11:30, stepping off from Balbo and Monroe.
Aha, uh-huh, see,
there
I knew there was one.
Have you ever gone to that?
I haven't, actually. I should look into it, because I know just there's a really thick, great cultural presence of Polish people in Chicago. Makes you feel at home. Well, not that I'm from there, but you know.
You should be leading the Polish Constitution Day Parade.
What's the Polish cookie? Because I have a sister-in-law who makes the, why can I think of it? It's on.
You're talking about punchkis, but
punchkis.
I wouldn't really call them. They're kind of a cookie,
but
I guess.
But that's not the cookie. She makes the little, come on, help me out. It's the little.
I know what you're talking.
You mean like the
little fruit
the ravioli
in it, right?
Thing?
Yeah, it's like the ravioli type pasta.
Yeah, klotchkis.
Yeah, Jeff's I don't know.
It's not that, but I do have to think of what it is because they're delicious. They make them potato, meat ones.
Are you talking about
pierogies?
Pierogies.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
thank
so
you.
Good.
Sorry,
so
but they're
good.
Delicious.
She's making some?
Not today, but she does every
she
year.
She makes some mean pierogies. Well, that was fun. Thanks for that, Elif. Appreciate that. And
no
hope
problem.
You guys find something new to do this week with all this fun stuff. A couple things that Elif brought to our attention, which I think definitely need to be discussed, Sherry. One of them here is a oxymoron. Smoking weed can motivate you to exercise, a study finds. Mixing, this is from CBS3, mixing weed with your workouts could be beneficial, according to a new study. Health experts say smoking pot can actually motivate someone to get to the gym. Researchers in Colorado, of course, Colorado, surveyed more than 600 people in five states where the drug has been legalized for recreational use. They found that those who smoked either before or after hitting the gym, or even both, said they worked out even more. Some say it even helped with recovery from minor aches and pains. What do you think about that, Sherry?
I think that the stereotype that smoking marijuana gives you the munchies is probably...
True or not?
I'm not sure. I mean, that's just the stereotype. But I think that it's probably... I feel like whatever mood you are in, it probably will enhance that. And I think it probably makes you more focused. So I could see it helping in that regard, like making you more focused on what you're doing. And
I agree.
But I do know some people who... cannot mix. Like, their chemistry in their body, for some reason, could have marijuana in the smallest form.
And go work out?
No, and they're just a complete mess. Yeah. So I think, again, it's probably individual, but I don't know that it would give energy, but maybe focus?
Certain strains apparently do. Like a sativa gives you a little bit more energy and more uppity, from what I've read. As well as an indica strain is more of a relaxing anti-anxiety. So I think if you're going to try the smoking weed before you exercise, which I'm not saying people should, but this article thinks that it does work, you probably want to go with more of a sativa strain to give you some energy. Now, I think that you could totally see where if you're in the gym, got headphones on, and you smoked a little bit before, you could totally zone out and get into it. My concern would be being too lackadaisy and maybe getting injured. Like if you're running on a treadmill and... or like lifting a heavy weight and smoked. I don't think I'd advise that.
Well, and it's probably finding that balance again, because I feel like people could take it to the extreme and abuse it. But if it's used probably in the right amount and the right strand, I think it could be very effective in helping a lot of people.
Oh, there's no doubt like CBD and, you know, all of the cannabinoids that they use for anti-inflammation and anxiety are phenomenal for people. And it's only the more studies come out, the more they're finding out about, you know, the benefits of cannabis and all the medical uses for it. But I don't know, maybe we should try smoking before you go work out.
Me?
Yeah, why not?
We'll do a poll and then I'll come back and report.
Maybe it'll get you to the gym more.
That is so nice of you. I have not been
okay,
to the gym.
Okay, what just happened on the air?
I know, right? I have not been to the gym. I don't even remember the last time.
Yeah.
Before children, he's probably.
Like, he's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we have a treadmill in our house.
Alpha male over here is telling his wife to go to the gym.
No, I'm not. I'm just suggesting it.
No, for health. I mean, I'm starting to work out more, which means I've been on the treadmill probably once in the last 2 weeks. But
which is more than you have been.
Yes. I think I know for myself, for health purposes, I need to move more and exercise more. It's just me finding that time to do that.
Yeah.
While I'm calling my children.
That's what I'm saying. If you smoked, maybe you'd find time.
Perhaps.
Possible.
Perhaps. It's
possible. And more focused while you're working out. We have a couple texts coming in saying that there's that this one guy actually, or gal, smokes every morning before they go running.
Wow.
Right?
That run is probably full of like imagination and really cool
visuals.
Things. Yeah, I'm sure it's great.
Fireworks going off as you cross the finish line.
Do they think that they're running through like an endless tunnel, or
could be, or you maybe are tricked to think you ran more than you actually did because time just goes and you're just like, oh man,
this conversation feels like it belongs on That 70s Show.
Totally. Pass,
do you remember?
Pass that around.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and it really does.
And we're actually forming a circle.
We kind of are. Yeah, exactly.
If people could see us, they would be frightened, perhaps.
Pass that over, Cher. All right. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll wrap things up. We have a few last-minute nuggets of wonderful information passed through us via some news topics that I think, you know, would be really profound. Like, it takes one bad step for to fall off the cliff at the Grand Canyon.
Ouch.
Yeah, we'll leave that as a cliffhanger, no pun intended. This interesting story coming out of the Arizona Republic newspaper. Apparently, it's a thing that people fall into the Grand Canyon and die. Did you know that?
I did not know that. And are you saying that they're doing this on purpose or just completely by accident and they're like taking a photo or they're so...
Yeah. Like one wrong step. So I guess in 1 8-day stretch, three visitors had died, which is part of the this little snippet from the USA Today network. On first, the one is March 26th, the body of a Japanese tourist was found in a forest behind the Grand Canyon Village. 2 days later, a man from Hong Kong slipped off the rim near the Grand Canyon Skywalk, and he plummeted to his unfortunate death. April 3rd, a 67-year-old California man dropped from the edge. Then details on their death is unclear. So I guess all these, you know, deaths so close to each other is really started the brew happening and people started talking about it. And it's now become a really big topic that how many people died at the Grand Canyon.
Well, that's a lot of people in 1 week. If you really think about it, it doesn't sound like it, but in the scope of time, three people in 1 week is
crazy.
Scary.
Overall, almost 800 people have died at the Grand Canyon, according to an unofficial tally. By some authors of a book that kind of follow this. It's a thing.
So
be careful going to the Grand Canyon.
Well, I'm wondering if people are taking the exploration too far and like they're not paying attention to signs, or if it's just not, is it deteriorating as time goes on and like certain areas are becoming unsafe? Like I wonder now if they're taking it into consideration and actually taking precaution to limit people to where they're
Can't get too close to the edge, though. I would think it was probably the bigger things. In the world of selfies that we live in today, I would imagine a lot of these deaths are related to somebody trying to take a really crazy photo of themselves. You know,
they can post it.
I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you see it walking across the street here. People like got their heads buried in a phone going through, you know, crosswalks when they shouldn't be.
Right. And there's so many people who have died taking selfies.
It's frightening.
That's an interesting stat I'd like to find, Elif. We should dig that up.
There was a whole story. There was a list of them like a few years ago that I might have given to one of my hosts back in that time when it happened. But I'm not surprised if it's still happening. It's terrible and it's scary.
It is. Well, I went to Utah and went on a rafting trip. Why are you laughing? You're reading something that I probably would not like.
No, 217. Did they also count Thelma and Louise going over the edge?
Oh, my God.
Pretty funny.
That's funny.
You were there?
I went. I was in Utah on a rafting trip. It was my first experience like that. And I did some hiking and I wasn't almost falling off a cliff, but I could see how people can if they take it, you know, to places they're not supposed to go.
Do you have fear of heights?
I did. It's becoming less and less, so not as much. But I went rafting down the river, and you're on the raft, and you're going down the river, and you can't see what's in front of you.
You just see cliffs and edges, and
you're making fun.
No,
of me, right?
I've never been whitewater rafting.
You do see cliffs, and you don't know how the rapid will be that day. So it's kind of like you're just going on an adventure down the river, and it's crazy. It's scary, but it's also fun.
Rough it, though, and like sleep on the edge of the mountains and all
Oh,
that?
I roughed it and had this tiny little duffel bag. I was allowed to bring only like 5 items.
What was the 5 items you brought?
Toothpaste, toothbrush, no change of clothes.
No underwear? No fresh underwear?
No. You just basically went into the river to clean yourself. No bathrooms, you know, no
really?
Prearranged campsites.
I can't see this about
you. We had a guide. We had 2 guides and 10 people on the raft. And my friend Kim was like, I used to work with this great girl, Kim, at Navy Pier. And she was like, come with me. So I decided last minute to go. City girl, going to Utah, whitewater rafting. And when we started to go down the river, I was scared out of my mind. But no cell phone service. It was like one of the best experiences because you were just connecting with nature and had nothing else to do. No other choice but to be present and connect.
Let's go back a little bit here. You were washing yourself in a river naked with other people around?
No, my clothes were on. Some people took their clothes off, yes.
Yeah.
I left my clothes on and just went into the river and did my thing. And
did you bring soap with you?
No.
I don't know why I'm so enthralled by the
idea
that
I had to go up the mountain to use the bathroom. Like, this is no pre-arranged campsites, nothing. Like, I went into the mountain behind the tree, went to the bathroom, and...
Wait, one of the 5 items were toilet paper at all?
Or... No, it was not.
What did you wipe your butt with?
A napkin that like was disposable. It was something
that
they provided.
Oh, yes. They provided you with wipes.
And the only thing that freaked me out the most was I did not pitch a tent. Mm. I felt like I was just going to sleep outside on a cot. And I just, it was beautiful. The stars were like right there. I felt like I could touch them. Obviously I couldn't, but it was beautiful. But there were just little critters and mice running around and you could hear them at night. That was the only
nothing
part
crawled into
I
your,
did not
your
like.
Sleeping bag?
No, I didn't know sleeping bag. You're just on a cot with this little blanket. So at night was it was a little bit rough, but
yeah, I've never
I would
to
love
Grand
to go.
Canyon.
We have to go with the kids. I think we would have an amazing time. Maybe a shorter time.
Yeah.
And maybe our nighttime will look a little bit different than just on the cot.
And no selfies by the edge.
No selfies, no cell phones. I would love to unplug and be like completely technology free.
I would see like, you know, when I'm reading this article, I would say that should be a rule almost, you know, and maybe they set up their own selfie stations that they can send email pictures to people. But I think that is a true, probably a good cause of why these people went over the edge. I can't imagine somebody willingly going right up to the edge, putting themselves at risk and just
I would love like check your cell phone at the door, but I think that would be a very hard thing to do to get people to not have their technology with them. But I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, people are agreeing. 847 taking risky pictures is the main reason, according to an article in a recent paper, that people expire for dumb reasons to take a cool photo. I mean, is it worth it? Do you do this kind of stuff, Aleph?
No.
I even get nervous taking a picture out of this window on at WGN Studios. We're so high up here on the 18th floor.
Yeah, like what if your head touches the window and you just
freak out,
fall through.
You know what I do love though? You ever see those videos on Instagram, like where that I don't it's somewhere in China I think where they have like a glass bridge and people walk through and like it fakes like the glass is cracking underneath them and the people freak out and like just land on the floor. Google it. It's
that would fun. Be the end of my life,
yeah.
Basically, because I would be so afraid.
All right, that about does it for us. I want to thank John Williams for letting us keep his seat warm while he's gone. Sherry, thank you so much for being here in my life.
Well, thank you for having me. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the show. It was fun for us. Visit us online on Instagram. You can go at Frank Fontana or check out my website, frankfontana.net. And Sherry doesn't like to give her social media stuff out, so.
It's Sherry Fontana, Sherry_Fontana, but I haven't posted in 2 years.
Oh, change of heart. Coming up next, Ro Khan, who I think is standing by, right?
Yes.
Hey, Ro.
Standing by. I'm right here.
Hey, Ro, we want your opinion on something.
Oh, God, no.
Because, you know, we love you. Working out and weed, do you think they go together?
I don't do either, so I have no idea. I can't really help you with any of that.
What do you got going on?
Alcohol, I can tell you, alcohol and working out do not go well together.
They don't.
No, that's generally you're throwing up through your nose.
For multiple reasons,
whatever Sherry did in the river in Utah.
Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You notice how vague she was?
I got it.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just not exactly 100% sure how many people died in your story, because it was people like getting up near the edge of a cliff, and then there was water. Water and there was a whole thing. I don't know.
Frightening.
Did anybody die in your story, Cher?
No.
No. Okay. Just want to clear that up.
All right. Okay.
What do you got coming up?
I have no idea.
Okay, good.
Michael Steele, and this hour, Michael Steele's going to join us as he does every Friday. And Demetrius Ivory getting ready for the weekend on the CLTV show. So we got that, right?
All right. Have a good show then.
All right. Have a good weekend, guys.